Welcome, everybody. We got that awesome flight test music bringing us into the Million Dollar Flight Test podcast studio once again. Tonight I got Wayne Griffith here with us.
Hey, guys.
I got Mike Coolins.
Hello.
And I got a special guest on the line with us tonight.
Yeah, he's special, all right.
The innovator of the Friday Night Update, the man who blows up my Instagram feed, the man who sometimes answers his phone, the man who blew us off for the last couple weeks, the man who's been stressing out over the last 2 days over buying a 40C battery or a 60C battery, the guy who should definitely own stock in Hobby King, the scratch builder extraordinaire, and originator of the large floppy H-quad, Canada's own, and our favorite Canadian, Andre Russo, buddy. What's happening?
Hey, finally I'm back. It's been a bit of a hiatus for me here.
I know that.
The floppy quad. Yeah. I like that part for the header.
Oh, that was fun.
Do you like that?
I had to do something throughout the winter to keep myself occupied.
That was interesting. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Andre, one thing before we start, I got to say, I didn't have to pay Fred to answer the phone.
No. Oh, man, he ripped me good.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, everybody out there, listen, I'm just joking. Don't get carried away or anything. I'm just joking. So how are you, Andre? How's things going up there in the wild winter north?
Oh, it's a nice sunny day, but don't look at the forecast for tomorrow and Sunday. It's horrible this weekend again. So no flying, unfortunately, which is too bad because like I posted there, my buddy picked up a Delta Ray and he's all excited to go flying. So.
Right. Awesome.
So is that way your neighbor was flying? Was that the Delta Ray, Chris?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I flew that.
And, Mike can attest too, Andre, you know, we've taught several people on that Delta Ray and
it's a great beginner.
Yeah, it's a hit. So he ought to have a lot of fun. The only suggestion I'd throw out there though, you know, the first time I know it's been windy and it's probably going to be windy, but for his absolute first time, if you can try to catch either early morning on a weekend or a late evening when the winds are like 5 below for that, just that, you know, first maybe couple flights. And then after that, he should be pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to wait for optimal conditions because it's not just the wind, it's just the cold temperatures. And who wants to be shivering while you're learning the first time with, you know, the adrenaline pump will be going as it is.
Right. All right, well, hey, let's get this party started or something like that. Welcome, everyone. Thank you once again for listening to the Flight Test After Hours podcast. I think we got a pretty good one tonight. Lots to talk about. It's going to be fun and exciting. Everybody's revved up, and we're all juiced up here on our Fedora coffee. Got to throw that out there again. Anybody that likes coffee, or I should say good, fresh, roasted coffee, you can't beat Fedora coffee. Check them out at Fedora Coffee Works. And I think, Wayne, you can attest to that if you'd like to do a little shout-out and let them know, you know. I'm not joking around. It really is good coffee.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I took a bag of it to work, and it got destroyed.
Did it really?
Yeah, those guys were loving that stuff. They were, I mean, for them to stop and actually notice, where'd you get that coffee at? And I told them all about it, and they're saying, that stuff is so fresh, and it's really good.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah.
And I've been addicted. He's got a new Mafia blend.
I'm going to have to try that. Actually, I think it's my next bag.
It's just, as my wife will make fun of me, it's so smooth and it has this like this chocolatey aftertaste to it. And I honestly can't get enough of it. So
I'll probably put my order in tonight.
So go check them out. Fedora Coffee Works for some great coffee. Next up, hey, everybody should know, or if they don't, we're telling you now, Flight Fest 2015 is coming up quick.
Oh, yeah.
I think last I heard, they have over 400 pilots registered already. Hmm. It is in the same place that we've had it, and they are going to try to expand it a little bit from what I understand and get the field, I think, at the one end, you know, to make some more room. But they're still limiting the pilots. I'm not even sure. Was it 600 pilots or I don't know. I'm not going to say
700. 700. Last year,
maybe.
But
it's
I don't
more.
Know what they're limiting it to.
But I'm just telling you, there is a limit. So the registration, the pre-registration is open. Just go to flighttest.com, get on there, register, because once it's full, and you'll be out of luck. So if you're even thinking about it, you might as well register and get all
set up.
The
website shows camping information, hotel
information.
All
the information.
I was reviewing it a little bit last night.
Yep, so. And that's Flight Fest, FEST.com. Go check it out and get registered. A couple other things before we dive in here. The Toledo show, Weak Signals, is coming up April 10th through the 12th. If anybody remotely close around that area, even if it's a 4 or 5 hour drive over the weekend, it's probably one of the best RC shows I've ever been to.
No, I'm looking forward to it.
So go check that out. They always have the latest and greatest, great vendors up there. There's a swap meet upstairs, new products you can buy right there.
Bring a pocket full
of
money.
Yeah, bring some money. It's got some good restaurants around the area, hotels, everything. So go check it out. So Weak Signals, April 10th through the 12th. The other thing going on this weekend, if you're hearing this right now, it is going on now. They have the NEF at the Akron Fieldhouse, and it's the Northeast Flight Festival, I believe it is. So they got that going on, started Friday, and I believe it goes till Sunday, probably early afternoon. So go check that out. Mike, what's going on with your H-Quad, buddy? I know you were working on that a little bit.
Well, and I'm trying to remember because I haven't honestly messed with it since the weather was pretty bad. But last I messed with it, I was trying to dial the gains down to get some of the oscillations going. It improved it, but I think it might need to come down a little bit more to make for smoother flight.
Uh-huh.
Other than that, it's pretty much ready to go. I have to I did put too much Velcro where the battery's secured, and it makes it real – I have a real little bit of clearance between the camera – a tray and where the battery's housed, and I got to work on that a little bit. But other than that, it's up and
pretty good to
it's
go.
Flying,
good, yeah, we got to get you out there. And
yeah, I want to get some good video.
Yeah, exactly.
Out there, so
yeah, got to get some video out there.
Looking forward to that.
It was David Vindenstol's birthday here this week, so I was texting a little bit back and forth. The guy's pretty busy, but I seen some spy photos. You know, he might have sent me up some new stuff he's working on. So let me just say, you wait, guys.
Oh, yeah.
You wait. I showed him to Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
It's some pretty cool stuff, kind of on the cutting edge, I think, coming out. So if he gets that out soon, you guys are going to be surprised. So keep an eye out on his website, RC Explorer.
Oh, David always has good stuff.
Yeah, and it's actually a good website anyway.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah.
So check that out. Andre, I wanted to talk to you a little bit, you know, probably pretty much talk to you every day.
Fun.
But, you know, over the winter and stuff, you were really working on a winter quad, and, you know, we were kind of making fun, but, you know, you were having fun, and you were working on that giant H-quad and everything. But what was your goal? I know you were trying to find something, I guess, kind of weatherproof, snowproof, and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and actually, yeah, the end result wasn't too bad, and it was just it was me grabbing the stuff I had in-house and slapping it all together. So the floppy one that you guys saw was just experimenting, and the frame
Thank
was
Kevin.
Just... God. Well, it flew, but you got a hover out of it.
I can't believe
and then it just turned into this oscillating nightmare, right? So in the end, it was a spider quad that worked out, and I took like a clear shoe bin and slapped all the electronics in there. And I had it out a couple of weekends ago with James and his cousins, and you know it's got the a little egg dropper or candy hopper thing from Hobby King. We had a bunch of colored ping pong balls, so I take it out, drop it, land it, and release the kids, and you know wore them out because they're running through like you know hip waist and hip deep in snow trying to find little orange ping pong balls all over the place.
Oh, that's
Why
funny.
Didn't you drop it closer? Oh, I tried. But, yeah, it was, you know, it was me experimenting, and it turned out it worked pretty good. So we might try and keep it together for the rest of the summer because that was one of James's goals. He wanted something to be able to drop the ping pong balls or the little parachute guys and that green bomb that you put flour in from Hobby King. It's got that strapped on. So it actually's got quite the payload.
Yeah, no kidding. And it was just kind of, you know, a little ingenious, you know. It looked like a clear plastic Tupperware container, you know, with some sticks hanging out the sides of it, you know, with everything, you know, sealed up on the inside. So it looks like it worked good.
It worked well because version one, I was stunned at the amount of. I had my little mini KK board off the off my 250. I was stunned how much water got into the ESCs and the KK board just from the snow being picked up and dumped back on top.
Mm-hmm.
So that bin is like a 99-cent shoe bin from Home Depot, and I just plugged some holes through it. And I ran the ESCs actually inside the case, and so everything sits nice and warm. The motors don't care about getting wet. Well. in the really extreme cold, you'll get ice or water inside the can, and then it'll freeze up, and then the motor stops spinning. So you got to be careful with that because you can fry some components there. But otherwise, it ran in some pretty cold weather.
Did you watch the waterproofing episode Flake just put out by any chance?
I want to try some of that stuff, but I think it's hard to get up here. So
just teasing. They did actually. I saw there was an article in Make a Magazine that they did their waterproofing on a page. I was reading that.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I didn't even know. And my buddy's like, "Did you see they have another article in Make Scene
or
the Make Magazine?" I'm like, "Yeah, no." And I read it, and it was about the waterproofing episode. Mm-hmm.
That was
kind of cool.
Yeah, that blew my mind. Really, what they could do with that. I wanted to touch base too. The other thing, I think it's a long term project for you, and I know we've talked a lot about. And you know, you actually have been pushing me a little bit into getting to do more quad stuff or multi-copter stuff and a little more aerial, you know, video and stuff. But now you're kind of working on building an APM quad, right?
Yeah, that's one of my big projects for this summer, and that's slowly coming to weather. Actually, the kit's in Canada, but just hasn't cleared customs yet. So maybe next week I'll start getting it. But that's just a simple S500 quad frame. Mm-hmm. I know I should do hex, but everything's about a budget right now.
Right.
It's got a cheap, you know, two axis gimbal, but it will do the APM. And I'm looking forward to that for some of the, you know, the interaction with tablets and laptops and wireless while you're in the field. And so it should be kind of exciting to see how it performs and see how stable of a platform it is. We'll see.
And you know, and that's my big thing is you know, watching some of your stuff that you do and everything is you really kind of take, in a way, a budget to the next level. Like, you know, after you get done with everything, for what you're going to have for an APM quad, it really is going to be really cheap, honestly, from, you know, me pricing some stuff out. So I am very curious to see with some of that, you know, I want to say cheaper Hobby King stuff, how well that quad does perform or how stable it is or how well it does work. Because really, if you get that built and tuned and tested and it works out right, I think that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, like motor-wise, I'm cheating. I had spare DT750s here for the tricopter. So I'm like, oh, well, I'll pick up another one because Hobby King had a sale. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that's what I got. I know a lot of people are going to go, oh, that's not the right motor. But you know what? That's what I had in the closet ready to go.
Right.
So that's been my philosophy on that. And I admit I wanted to try the APM stuff for a long time. So it was just one of those, you know, it's one of me settling down this year and saying I've got three core projects and this is one of them. So I'm going to start banging this stuff off and just seeing how far I can go with it. So, and you know, if it turns out to be a really good aerial platform, excellent. If it turns out to be a really fun thing where I can just sit there and plot grid coordinates and buzz around, fine.
Right.
So we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. You know, and I do make fun of Andre a lot, but I think one of the reasons I do is because I see myself and you a lot. Like, you know, 5 years ago when I was getting into the hobby and not knowing a lot, but, you know, I'd spent hours reading or researching or not knowing, you know. So I just kind of laugh, you know, a lot of the stuff you ask me, and a lot of times I don't even have the answers, but I just think back of myself, you know, when I was at your stage, you know, I'm gung-ho about trying this and doing that and building this and seeing what this does. And so I kind of find it interesting, you know. Hopefully you take it with a little grain of salt.
I'm this is all about having fun for me. I mean, like, I have to do my own little plug and thank Mike Finley. He threw an EDF motor to me, you know, put it in the mail and sent it from one of his planes.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And that, you know, it was February when that all started coming in. And so my cost was I had to go get a EDF, ESC. And now we're in the middle of testing and developing, you know, a scary looking, fun, swept forward, swept wing EDF plane. And it's just, again, it's just, you know, it was February and I was, you know, stuck indoors because someone forgot to buy his Nano Blade when he was told to buy it. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So. Remember I told you I had three projects? Well, Nano Blade is on the Christmas list, so that'll happen this winter,
good.
Right? Because because yeah, this was a silly winter. But that EDF, if anybody checks out my YouTube page, it flew last weekend. Now the weather hasn't been nice enough to do a follow up, and it's one of those things where I'm just slowly plugging away. I know all the theory, and it's all been proven and written. Well, it's me going through and still, you know, finding out for myself.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that was an interesting build. You know, we went back and forth a little bit on the EDF and the tube and everything and length and cutting it off and, you know, narrowing it up. And so it was cool to watch you go through that and see, you know, what you finally come up with and what worked well. So that was fun. Hey, real quick before we jump into some other stuff, I wanted you, because obviously a couple of us here have been wanting one, and we don't have one. So the last few months, I know you ended up purchasing the Durafly EFX Racer. We've talked to a few other people that have got it and flown it, and David was one, and he really raved about it. So now that you've had it for a little while, we just wanted to get your opinion and give us a little mini review on that plane.
It's crazy. Now the biggest problem I've run into, it was a Christmas gift, and we had some weather early on in December, and I've had several successful flights. I haven't had any with the 4S, and that was just weather related. And the last flight I did, it was really good, and then on landing my hands were so numb, and you know, that's when I stuffed it into that hard ice and wrinkled up the front end of it. Mm-hmm. But there've been a couple of good flights on the 3S, so I've gone back to the 3S setup, and I've got a few more 3S batteries that are going to be able to handle that airplane. But it's a sleeker looking version of the, and I'm going to maintain this one, the FT Racer. It flies, to me, it feels very much the same, mm-hmm. but you have to be on your toes.
It looked like it, yeah.
But I mean, it is so responsive. There's that one video from I think it was late December, where I'm coming in and you can see the deck. I'm like inches off the deck when I pulled up, but it was like, okay, go, and it just snaps right up and it rolls. The only hairy thing about this airplane and it is the launches.
Right.
But I've had two or three successful launches. I did one with the 4S and I had a hiccup, and I think what it was the receiver, I think, had shook loose from all the commotion of trying to get it in the air, and was actually impacting or impeding the elevator from actually working correctly.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I've gone and I've actually glued and put a layer of tape across the top of the receiver to try and hold it in position. So
right,
but
and usually when you have something like I found out, you know, with like say the Striker, or Dwayne will know with my Ultra my Funjet. Or not the, what is that stupid thing? The multiplex ultra something jet. Anyway.
Is it the rad jet?
No. You got to find that perfect power, you know, a takeoff power. Like if mm-hmm. you got too much, the thing just really wants a torque roll. Just spin and roll right in the ground.
Yeah, I was wondering if this did.
Yeah, and then if you have not enough, then it just kind of just goes right into the ground. So you got to find that sweet spot.
If it torque rolled on him when he just hand launched.
Yeah, it did one time. If you watch his video, I don't know how you say this thing just rolls around like into going to the ground. And
see,
then
my heart's skipping just thinking about that scenario. I've been in there, so I know.
So. I'm guessing horrible. With that four cell, and you're dropping the prop on that thing and then winding it up, you got to find that sweet spot for the takeoff, I'm guessing.
I have a feeling the trick is going to be to get someone to when I do go to four cell, I'll get someone to hand launch it for me, and I want to be behind them.
Sure.
Because when it's coming at you or something like that, it's a little it is a fast moving plane, but
I bet.
I've got the four cell setup, but I've got a feeling that I'm going to enjoy it more in the three cell, just because, like we've said, you know, I think the balance is a little better,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a slightly larger prop, and you know, but when it does fly, it is so much fun to track, and it's very visual. I like the yellow one for that reason. I find yellow easier to track than red, but it's one of those planes that I'm looking forward to spring coming to and actually getting some real flight time behind.
Good. That's I've had my eye on that one for quite a while. So and down the road, I might have to get one. We'll see what happens.
We'll see if I can fit it in the car for Flight Fest.
Yes, bring it to Flight Fest. Yeah, absolutely. And then I was it you were showing me somebody had one for FPV.
Oh gosh. Oh, that picture, that poor airplane. It's everything, you know. Well, I'm sure someone wanted to do it, but all I could think of was, I know how this thing flies, and it would be like, you know, oh, there's ground, you know, and that's it. You know, I could just see this thing just like, you know, going 100 miles an hour, and you're in your goggles going, where am I?
Right.
I think I left the field back like 3 kilometers ago, you know. Yeah. Huh. So it was definitely interesting, but, you know, okay, someone tried it, but I'm going to stick to my slower-going airplanes for FPV, thanks.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. All right, hey, I got a couple things. I've been new things, couple things I was working on. First thing I wanted to talk about, though, is I got a DX9 finally. Been wanting one for quite a while. Got a really good deal through Horizon with it, but I will say, Wayne, I know you haven't really got to check it out much, but you know we've used our DX8s for a long time. Once you see this 9 and see how they change the programming and what it does, and it is amazing. I mean, literally, it's so easy. Actually, it almost has too much stuff. Like I was tinkering around with some settings the other day. Where I was, you know, you got to transfer all your planes over. You know, you can't take the SD card out and put it in because
of course
Yeah, because it's now they got smart and made it switches assignable, so they're all A, B, C, D. But anyway, I was going through the list and it is almost endless of what you can do with this radio. You know, I mean, it had functions in there for turbine jets, sailplanes. I mean, it was almost limitless. And the nice thing...
How do you store planes? Can you go over that a little bit?
It has an internal 250 model memory. Okay. But then you can also store things on the SD card. But the problem is the whole firmware and everything in the newer radio is not compatible with the older, like DX8.
So it doesn't recognize those file extensions then or something?
Yeah, I can't pull out my SD card and transfer and everything.
But you can store them, like if we were going from a DX9 to another DX9, you would be able to
transfer. Yeah, or DX18, or any of the new, like the new DX7, or probably the new
DX... As long as it's in that file format that they recognize.
Exactly, and I love the voice. And I was playing around with it the other night, and I sent the little voice thing to Andre. It's got, I mean, this lady has a list of things she'll say a mile long, and I'm going through there, and she had ones in there the other day I found said, bombs away. So I recorded saying to Andre, I said, here, you need this for your H-Quad, you know. It was pretty funny.
I admit I was looking for stuff for my 9X as well. I'm like, I know there's a mod ship somewhere that you can do it and you can talk as well. But that, you know, Laura was like, she's very polite.
Yeah, she does have a good voice. I will say that. So the one big plus is I kind of one of the reasons, too, I wanted the DX9 is Horizon came out. And, you know, everybody out there in podcast land listens to us that Wayne and I are big, you know, thermal flyers, sailplane flyers and everything. And, you know, generally around our area and places we fly, we're not in the best area. So there's days we go out and we'll fly for 2 hours, and there's other days we go out there and have nothing. And Horizon came out with a variometer.
Yes.
With an altimeter built in. So I ended up buying two of those, put one in the Radian and one in the Mystique. So I got them all set up, did just a little testing kind of like out in the front yard and everything. But, man, that thing, how nice is that going to be?
That's a dream.
I mean, you know,
to go over that again, it tells you when you're hitting left, and then yes, you know where you know to hit that spot.
There, yeah, it's tone based.
It's hard to visually see that.
What's nice about it is you can set up the parameters however you want. Like if you're, you know, 3 feet a second, or you want 2 feet a second, the tones will tell you exactly what kind of. And also, not only lift but also sink. So if you're cruising along, you get on the backside of a thermal or something, or in the sink, it just, you know, it's got a low tone and like a high tone.
Very beneficial because you can't visually. We were saying when you get up there, visually trying to see altitude,
right?
Change,
you know, unless you hit a big boomer, you know, where you physically can see the tail come up or the wing lift, or you know you're in it, you know. Or sometimes you get to the point where you're in one and you think you're really doing good, and then you get on the outside of it and boom, you're in the sink that quick. Mm-hmm. So, in a way, it's kind of cheating, I think.
It's all about fun, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Man. But, you know, it's kind of cheating. My phone's beeping on me. I don't know. It says I don't know who it is. But I think it's just going to make it more fun for us.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, I like, you know, well, I could be over here cranking around and Wayne, I got Lyft. It's over here. It's over here. You know, and you can come screaming across. And
well, but you've also told stories of where it's gotten too high. So now you're going to have another layer of protection so you don't get out of visual, right?
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I had the altimeter on the Mystique too, so
yes.
I won't say what limit I had it set in, but once basically I got to that limit, whether, you know, if I could see it or not, once I hit that limit, I just brought it down, because depending on the day, there's some days I could hit that limit and see it no problem, and there's other days I hit that limit and I was like, I don't know if I'm upside down, what direction I'm going, and
I hate that feeling.
Yeah, you know, just start sweating and freaking out, and you're trying to put it out. in a slow spiral, you know, and then I was telling you guys there the end of last summer there, I had it up high and was trying to get it out and down and got it into a dive and the wings started fluttering, so that really kind of freaked me out a little bit. So I'm excited, man. I get this. Get them out there and test. So once we test a little bit and we play around with it, well, I'm sure we'll get back in here and talk about it a little bit more and see.
That'll be interesting. I'd like to watch that.
I could see Wayne getting a DX9 and a couple. So, because it was kind of funny, you ended up buying, what was it, a 9XR? What did you buy the first time? Was it the 9X? You bought the Turnigy radio.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And then you had that for a while and turned around. I bought my DX8 and then you turned around and bought a DX8.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, for us too, we test fly a lot of bind and fly planes, so that DX8 really helped out a lot. But Andre, you have a 9X or 9XR?
I've got two 9Xs. They've both been firmware changed. So, and like one's got the module swap, so I can run the orange module, so I can do all the spectrum
right,
stuff.
Right, right. That is one nice feature about them. I mean, you could put in probably put in a Futaba module or spectrum module or high tech module. That is nice. And you really like that radio too, don't you?
It's serving my purpose for what they were. Yeah, I mean, I would love some of these other ones, but again, you know, and this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier in the week. When I started this hobby, when I got into it, I had other more higher consuming financial hobbies.
Right, right.
So now I'm at this point now where RC has really become my primary, and yeah. I could look at another radio, but I have two of these now. Like my buddy bought a Spectrum radio, so I picked up his 9X. And so one is my primary Turnigy for all my park flyers, and the other one has got the other module allowing me to fly the bind and flies and do some of my long-range stuff that I'm going to be experimenting with later on this year. So they serve my function right now. So who knows what I'll look at down the road, you know.
Right.
I might want my radio to talk to me too.
That is nice. I'll tell you, I'm starting to really like that. So the only other thing I'm kind of working on a little bit, and I haven't got too far on it, is I'm actually trying to build a mini hex. And I finally got some scrounged up some motors and ESCs and everything, but it's been going rather slow. I got so much other stuff going on. So Wayne, I might just pass that on to you and say, here you go. Here's the parts. Build it. Fly it. We'll get a board camera for it and everything. I got the FPV gear and everything. We'll throw it on there and we'll see what it does. So, other than that, anything with you guys? Anything new going on or you're working on or building or anything like that? Nothing. Come on, Mike. You got something? You got that gun on that?
No. I'll tell you. It's the Mighty Mini Storch. I still have, or I think it's the Storch. Is that right?
Trainer, the tiny trainer.
It's a Mighty Mini, on that one of those models. I think it's not the Storch. I forget what it's called. It might be that, but anyways, I have the wing done, the fuselage.
Mini Guinea?
No, it wasn't that.
Mini something.
Yeah.
All right. So you're working
Scout?
On it.
Scout? I think it's the
Scout. Mini Scout.
Yes.
Yeah,
that one.
That's it.
It's that one. And I got the wing done, the fuselage done. I'm pretty much, I haven't put the last few minutes on it to finish it up, basically. So that's where I'm at with that. I gotta get back on that. It probably would have been good for the indoor thing that's going on this weekend.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They still. My dad built the Mini Scout, and we just picked him up a quad, a 250 motor, and he is really happy with that combo.
Oh, really?
You know? And it flies really well in the wind, so he's been bombing that around.
That's
and having
cool.
a good time.
That's cool.
I've got mine hanging on a wall, but the other day I was showing James the tiny trainer, and he likes that one. He says, he flat out said, that reminds me of your little UMX Radian. I said, well, we're going to build two, and we're going to get you flying this summer.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
So it's, he's showing, he's slowly showing interest. And I'm like, come on to the field and come flying with me, kid, you know?
Yeah, they're definitely, the Mighty Minis don't look intimidating. I think people would be more apt to give those a try. So I like that.
Hey, before I forget, and I'm sure you guys have seen it, but on the regular flight test Instagram, they had a couple really cool pictures and videos that, you know, Alex did of the LaBelle. Way up in the air.
Yeah.
And I was watching, I'm like, wow, those guys are really doing good. You know, probably had a good throw where they caught a thermal down there. I can't believe it. Now, I was listening to their podcast, and they towed that sucker up. So next time I see Bixler, I'm going to have to give him some crap. They towed that thing up there. I couldn't believe it.
Well, that's like the Peter video where it looks like he's flying. I showed my son that.
Oh, yeah.
My son was like, he's 10. So he's like, he fell for a hook, line, and sinker. I went to the end real quick and stuff.
Oh, that's
funny.
What
did they use to tow it, Chris?
I don't know. I didn't.
Sport cup?
I don't know what they towed it up with.
It wouldn't take much.
No, it wouldn't take much, but I just listening to the podcast, somebody said, yeah, we kind of cheated and towed it up there.
Kind of cheated.
Yeah,
that's not kind of.
So I guess Bixler was all worried about if they had him on camera, him throwing it up, and then they would dissect his form and tell him he looked goofy.
Who cares?
I know what happened
sucks,
one time he
fun.
Was spinning. I won't mention that.
I think the last time probably ruined him, on camera. So. So that was the end of that. All right. Hey, the other thing, and I can't believe I forgot this, and I can't believe one of you two didn't catch it, but on the last podcast, we were talking about all these, these newer products and things that were coming out and everything, and one of the things we were really excited about, and I think what happened was is we were talking about it amongst us so much that I think when we, we thought we talked about it.
I thought we did. I really did. I can't believe we overlooked
it. I know,
this.
I can't either, but I just want to throw this out there real quick since we forgot to mention it, but Horizon Hobby has also brought out the Night Vision Air. And basically what it is, it's the Vision Air. It's the same plane, basically. They put the new receiver in it, the 636, which now has the safe. So the original Vision Air just had the AS3X.
Mm-hmm.
And I always was intrigued by that plane a little bit, but I don't know what it was. I was just didn't want to spend the money for it. So what they did is they brought the plane back out, new scheme, put the safe system on it, which is fantastic because, it's kind of a not beginner, but it's more of the, if you're an intermediate flyer, want to try some 3D stuff, that's what it's built for. And I never really could understand if they're trying to get people, into that or get into the 3D a little bit, why originally they didn't put the safe on it. And I'm sure there was a reason behind it. But the other cool thing, what really gets me about it is why it's called the Night Vision Air, is they installed LEDs inside the airplane.
Looks
so
great.
It looks great because anybody that's flown at night, a lot of times, you can put LED strips all over your plane and light it up like a Christmas tree, but you're basically just kind of looking at lights, though. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Where this with the lights, the clear LED lights inside, it's actually lighting the physical plane. So when you're out flying at night, you're seeing the whole shape and physical characteristics of the airplane.
Yeah, it actually makes the foam look like it's glowing.
Exactly. Yep. And that's what really intrigues me because, Wayne, a lot of times, especially here in the spring, we have the time change. We're all excited. We're going to go out and fly. Well, now the spring sports are in effect. So sometimes we can't get out on the field till, 6:30, 7 o'clock. And then we fly for an hour, hour and a half. And then where now we can fly our normal stuff till it starts to get dusk or whatever. And then we could pull this out and continue on. And
that's sometimes it's the calmest part, too. I mean,
exactly.
Not fighting the elements. If you want to do 3D, it might be the best time to try that.
Exactly. Now, the only thing that's got me a little bummed, and I've been keeping my fingers crossed because I really want to buy – I'm thinking about buying one of these for myself, and then we can, go ahead
and
test it.
Yeah, I was hoping someone would send us one. I
know.
I guess we should mention it. Maybe that would happen.
I have mentioned it to Flight Tech, or I talked to Bixler, too, and I think they're going to get one. I don't know how soon, though. That's going to be the big thing.
Because it almost, to me, would be like the Sequoia, but for night as well, that added element.
Yeah, and it's – I think –
You said there was differences, though.
There is. It's going to be it's got a bigger wing, a little bit fatter. It's initially it's going to fly a little bit slower than the Sukhoi. Mm-hmm. So everything that you were doing with the Sukhoi, Mike, it's just going to be slowed down.
And that's
a little
probably
bit
better for night flying, regardless.
Yeah,
I would guess. Yeah.
Because even so, you get that thing out of ways at night. I think it's going to be kind of hard to see. The only downside that's really bothering me here lately, and I'm hoping they're going to maybe drop the price or whatever, and I think I kind of see what they did, is the original Vision Air was $299. But since the Vision Air has come down on a lot of their newer planes, Horizon has dropped their prices on a lot of things. Like now you can go and get the Sukhoi now for $209.
Yeah,
I saw that.
So if they drop the Sukhoi down to like $229, which was the original Sukhoi price, or even drop this down, I'm on it. I mean, I got the money is burning a hole in my pocket right now. I have the cash. I'm ready to go. But I don't know if they're afraid to drop it because everybody else is like, wait, I paid $299 for a regular Vision Air, you know, and now you're dropping. So I don't know. Maybe they'll sell some at this price.
What is the night Vision Air? I missed that price point.
It's $299.
$299. Okay.
Yeah. And
that's bind and fly.
Yeah, that's bind and fly. So we'll see what happens. If the weather starts getting really nice and we start getting these warm evenings, I just might have to just go get one. So, and I'm sure you've seen it too, Andre, huh?
Oh, I'll be envious.
Oh, yes.
Well, yeah, and I've got my Sukhoi, which I can't wait to go flying. I can't wait till we have a runway again.
Oh, you got one. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I got the Sukhoi. I
caught the old crap.
He's flown it.
Okay.
Yeah, he's flown it.
You don't like that, or the panic?
It was the panic and everything is fine. It was the stagility mode that we didn't like.
Yeah. I haven't talked to anybody that really liked it.
Yeah, that. But I'll tell you, the panic recovery mode, that is priceless in my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then for night flying, I've got my Video Aerial Systems Wraith, and that thing's lit up like a Christmas tree. Mm. And it's now it's got a return to home module on it. So if I'm flying around at night and anything happens, I can just hit that and it'll loiter around me.
What is this model?
It's an FPV plane.
Okay.
You know, and it's basically it's a two it's Alex Gravis there who does I Be Crazy.
Okay, yeah, I saw
and
him.
It's a Spectre with two motors, right? So anyhow, it's just built up, and that's the one I'm going to fly this summer during the nighttime stuff, because it's got lights embedded inside the foam and everything. So it does like Chris was describing, and it just glows.
Cool.
And you can see the whole thing. But then I've also got the my backup is my little return to home, so it will go into like this loiter hover or you know over top, and then I can just you know reorient myself if I get lost or something. So
right,
but yeah, I'm looking forward to just you know we never had a landing spot this winter. It was weird where the field was just you know I flew planes that I could land in the snow.
right. All right, well, we're gonna move on here a little bit, and not that I really want to do this tonight, but I just don't think a lot of this stuff we're going to talk about next, it's just hard to pass up. But again, we're going to kind of get into the drone stuff here a little bit. We're going to try to keep it light, but you know, we've had some stuff. We had some cool stuff that's happened, but we've also had a few things that went on that you know kind of blew my mind the last couple weeks. The one thing that's really been bothering me, though, and I guess I'm slowly kind of getting adjusted to it, but is the word drone. I think we're slowly just starting to accept it.
Yeah.
I know when we were shooting Rotor DR1, that's all they ever called them. So, you know, do we need the drones here or drone number two? You know, so I started hearing it a lot, even though in the back of my mind I'm like, well, they don't really know.
That negative connotation.
Yeah, exactly. But now it's getting to the point where anything you read, it's drone this, drone that. And now instead of multi-copters or everything, even the manufacturers, if you even like, say, Horizon Hobbies website, if you go on there, it'll say, you know, here's our drone page. I hate to say that. Right. It really still kind of bothers me, but I think there's no
around it
yeah.
now at this point.
It's just because of the negative connotation that goes with it.
Right.
That's the part that makes it bad because,
right.
you know, for those of us, it's a great thing no matter what you call it.
Yeah.
But with other people, whenever you say that, there's fear in their eyes, you know?
Right.
Like, oh, come on.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And, you know, and it's still, you know, you're out flying your little quadcopter or whatever, and somebody goes by and goes, oh, that's one of those drones, you know? And you're just like, no, it isn't a drone, technically. You know what I mean? But it's just, I guess.
Something happened in our local news. A guy came into work today, and he's like, that wasn't your copter that so got in trouble. They called it a drone, but I was like, I didn't see it in the news. I didn't know if maybe you guys. It's real recent, I think, like last night or something.
No, I didn't hear anything.
In the local news. Okay, so, well, then I won't go on with that. He thought, he's like, that wasn't you, was it? I'm like, no, I haven't been playing lately, so it definitely was not me.
Right. But here's one of the big positives, though, that I wanted to talk about a little bit, and I know Wayne's seen some of it, but as everybody probably knows, I'm a huge, huge Supercross fan. I actually worked the races for almost 20 years. I've been around it my whole life. And the last weekend for Saturday, they actually used drones to help film the Supercross for the actual live TV show, which to me is huge because motocross, Supercross is really kind of hard to explain. And unless you've been there or maybe have done it, or I took you, Wayne, last year in person to see it, to really see what these guys can do, you know, with these, you know, they throw these 230-pound machines around in the air and it's fat. It's totally amazing. I mean, you just can't fathom it. And for somebody who's never seen that or been around or whatever, it's really kind of hard for them to grasp and understand what, you know, what these guys really do. And a funny story was probably about, I'd say it's been 4 or 5 years ago now that the Supercross actually started to get sponsored by GoPro. Mm-hmm. And a guy, and I'm not sure if he's even around GoPro anymore, but a guy named Travis Payne, who I met, worked for GoPro, brought one. It was at that time, I think it was a Hex, brought it down on the floor. Now, this was practice only. Mm-hmm. And I helped him out since I had a little bit of knowledge and everything since Flight Test was getting into it. This is right kind of when Flight Test was getting into the FPV stuff. I helped him out, and we flew the quad around kind of on the side. We went into the middle, like where the starting area is, while they were practicing, and back then he just had a little monitor on his radio, and he got some really cool shots because you're kind of up and getting a perspective of what they see when these guys are traveling 30, 40 feet in the air, say off of a trip over a big rhythm section. But it really kind of fizzled out, and whether it was an insurance thing with Feld, the organization who runs it or whatever. So, you know, when you pack in 70,000 people in there, the last thing you really want to do is have an octocopter or a hexacopter or whatever go nutty and wipe out, so many people. Yeah. So when I heard about this, I was blown away. Really, I didn't think that would ever happen inside of a stadium like that. But some of the footage I seen on YouTube and stuff, you know, the shots that they are getting, and you seen it, Wayne. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. For one, $25,000 a piece, and they got three of them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But they have certified guys.
Sure.
Guys that know what they're doing.
Right.
And since it is indoor and since it is AMA, you know that these guys, they're going to dot their I's and cross their T's. They can't afford having anything wrong.
Yeah.
They're going to be on it. They're going to have safety. They have their eyes on it, so it's not.
What'd you think of the shots and stuff they were getting?
Absolutely awesome. Like you said, when you have more of, the spider cam is fine, but it's limited on where it can go and what it can do.
Yes.
But that quad sitting up there, and then they can, I call it a quad, but it wasn't. But you know what I mean. But they're flying that thing around, and you get that view, and it is awesome. I mean, because it's different when you see the jumps and everything from the air.
Right. And, it's not really something new either because for years and years doing videos and making videos and stuff for these guys, they've been using them, outside, of course, at the test tracks and, but just for an example, at the last Daytona race, and they've been doing this for years too. They have an all-terrain vehicle and they put a camera guy on the back. They strap them in a 5-point harness. And then as the guys are coming down the back straightaway, they drive the all-terrain vehicle alongside on the raceway. And the guys were averaging 50 some miles an hour going down through this whoop section, and they would film it live. The race was live, and it would give you that perspective of how fast and what these guys were really doing. And that's the only time they ever really, really do that. So now if you can take this hexaquad inside a stadium and run this hexaquad, 40 miles an hour down the side of a stadium at eye level at 30 feet. Think about that, Mike. You're seeing what these guys see at 30 feet doing 50 miles an hour. I think it's incredible.
Exhilarating.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was really excited to see that, and I think you can just grow from there. We'll see.
Yeah,
what
there's
happens.
Just some perspectives you can't get from a stationary camera. Right. You know, that's like when you sit there next to the field and you see how high they're jumping,
right?
Or some of the cross ups and all, you know, cracking the whips and whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
You don't get a real perspective sitting from a camera that's stationary.
Right.
But with this thing following, and when they're side by side, or they're tracking them or leading them even, now it's just endless on all the great shots they can get.
Right, right, right.
Yes, and are we excited? Oh, you better believe it.
Exactly. All right, moving on from there, we're going to talk a little bit. Now, in the last podcast, we kind of went through some rules and regulations that the FAA has thrown out there for possibly, getting people licensed for commercial drone use, as they call it. Mm. And, you know, we read through and everything, and I thought it was, you know, they had some pretty good guidelines in there, really. But I got to throw a shout-out to Jason Temper from Australia, and I think you might have met him too, Mike. Jason was actually at Flight Fest last year. I think he was on his honeymoon and came to Flight Fest.
Oh, yes,
super
I
cool
remember.
Guy.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
He got a hold of me, and he just kind of wanted to let us know that they kind of have the same type of system. Oh, you got it pulled up right there. I'll read a little bit. They put in something similar to what we're going to do, but I don't know how to put it. They changed the rules and regulations a little bit and then slapped on these massive amount of fees that you would have to to actually
make it
licensed.
To where you can't afford it.
So what he was saying is, you know, unfortunately, there's little variation in pricing between providers and what they have down there. And in simple terms, if you wish to fly a $1,000 DJI Phantom for commercial operations, then you need a $6,000 plus license. You know, in his mind, it's like buying a $20,000 car when you need, you know, a $120,000 license. And reading over it, it's actually from the Victorian UAS training. You can look it up, Google it, or whatever. But basically, I think the absolute cheapest I seen on there was probably about $3,000 mm-hmm. to get licensed to fly a commercial drone.
Wow.
Now, you what do you have in Canada? Because I know your rules and regulations are a little different up there, Andre.
Yeah, and it's it goes off weight classes from the I read it over a couple of weeks ago, so I'm just going off memory, but it's a weight class. So under X weight, you know, if you're not using it for commercial and you're under X weight, you don't have to submit anything. If it is for commercial and it's under X weight, well, you know, register. There's no fee or anything like that. And then from there, it goes to, you know, you've got to apply for one time, special certification or bypasses and stuff. So it all depends on the class of the actual copter. So I guess the gist of it is the lighter the machine, the better. So, in my case, if I ever went commercial, well, then I'd have to go to Transport Canada and say who I am and say what the weight is, what kind of vehicle am I operating. And then it's all similar rules, you know, X altitude, not FPV, line of sight. And then they stipulate, depending on the class of the vehicle, how close you can be to public and structures and stuff like this. So it's well laid out, but it's certainly not as restrictive as what you guys are currently looking at. So, well,
right.
So far anyhow.
Yeah.
It all depends on, you know, what happens. And they list the airport rules and very similar stuff to what was, you know, the basic common sense stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Common sense.
throw that away.
So just looking at their website there for everyone in Australia for the Victorian UAS training, it says you could be flying a UAV for a certified company for as little as $3,360.
As little.
And if you want to start up your own UOC certified business for as little, get this, as little as $5,000.
Mm, sure.
So I guess we got to kind of keep our toes and see, you know, if everybody says, oh, man, we love these rules and regulations. They're great. You know, put them in and then boom, you know, they turn around and they want to charge you. You know, and we were kind of joking around that when we had all that talk, you know, that it's going to cost you, you know, $8,000 or whatever, same as getting a private pilot's license or something like that.
Or if they even make you have to insure it, oh, man, where could that go?
That's
even
true.
Insurance on it.
Yeah.
If they made you have to insure it, they
right.
can,
yeah.
sky's the limit.
Well, at that point, you know, it's big corporation who will just go, yeah, we can, here's another line of business for us,
oh,
so.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a good pilot, maybe it's a job for you. But as a as an entrepreneur, you're or you know, a single small business owner, mm-hmm. you're done. You're cooked, right?
Yeah, the
right.
small businesses are the ones that are going to take it on the nose.
Yeah, yep. I agree. Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens. We'll have to keep our eyes and ears open on that. Another thing, too, that Wayne, you sent me. Of course, I pulled up the advertisement. I thought this was kind of funny. Now, we've heard, you know, I know there was one town in Colorado that had a, came up with a drone thing, said, you know, now it's legal if you find a drone flying over your house or your property, you can shoot it down or whatever. Yeah. Well, now here's something else that's pretty crazy, Andre, and you may not know about this since you're up in Ottawa there, but in California, lawmakers held a first hearing Tuesday on a bill that would extend the state's ground-based privacy rules to the air. Sometimes weighing just a few pounds and equipped with tiny cameras, drones can fly where no other aircraft could ever reach, and they can get shots and angles that no human eyes could ever see. This saying, you can spy on your neighbors. The director of USC Merced's drone lab, as he passed a drone around during the hearing, lawmakers got an update on how far drone technology has advanced. State Senator Hannah Beth Jackson, D. Santa Barbara, said she had her first encounter when she heard a buzz coming from her backyard fence. Suddenly, she said, a drone was about 15 feet away, hovering about eyeball to eyeball with me. Jackson has introduced an SB-142, which she said would protect people from their aerial invasions of privacy.
Oh, my.
Yeah. She said, if you were to jump over your neighbor's fence and stand in their yard recording what they had to say, that's trespassing, she said, so why would it be any different with a drone? Amateur hobbyists can already operate drones nearly anywhere they want. Under proposed rules released last week, the Federal Aviation Administration is considering letting people and businesses use drones to make money. However, neither the federal government nor the states have defined how nosy drones can be. There's just not enough laws right now that regulate the use of private and commercial drones in terms of ordinary people's privacy, said Lee of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. One challenge for Jackson's bill will be enforceability. If someone physically steps onto another one's property to take their picture, the invader can usually be identified. On the other hand, if a drone passes overhead, it may be impossible to know who it is at the controls. That's a problem, said Jim Ewart of the California Newspaper Publishers Association. The FAA is proposing to give them numbers or identifying them on some level. Jackson said finding the right balance between useful technology and protecting privacies could be difficult. However, she said, with thousands of commercial drones expected to take the skies in the next few years, lawmakers must act with urgency. Her bill is expected to come up for the first committee vote next month.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to figure if one state passes this, it's just going to keep
snowing. It is California. California doesn't count, so.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's
It's a knee-jerk reaction. And then, of course, you know, you have ignorance where you have people out there that all they do is listen to the news, so they're going to, you know, react out of fear. And then, of course, you have the ignorance of those people who are flying 15 feet in front of somebody's face like that and it's like, come on, guys.
Yeah. It's getting touchy out there. I mean, I don't know. It worries me. It really does. You know, Mike, you're out there just flying around your H quad, you know, out in the fear thing that's instilled on people now with these things, mm-hmm. with everything in the news and people doing this and doing that. Mike, you're going to be out in their backyard with your H quad and your neighbor's going to call the FAA on you and tell them you're spying on them. You know what I mean? That's a possibility, Mike. Mm-hmm. Didn't think about that, did you? All right. Come on, phone. Last but not least, I got to talk about because I thought this was actually a joke. But the FAA has been kind of trolling people on YouTube.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Did you hear about this, Andre?
I saw that. That is interesting and annoying.
It's annoying, but legally they can't do anything about it right at the moment. They can harass people, but they don't have anything they can stand on.
All right. My phone's acting up.
Well, so yeah, the gist of the case was a guy was commercially, yeah, he was made, he was commercially showing, well, he did a commercial job with his drone and then put his footage up, sorry, not drone, his multi-rotor. and then the FAA went after him for his, because he put the footage up on YouTube saying, now, you know, you're legitimately doing this as a commercial thing, you can't do this. But again, where is there, well, I mean, I have no grounds to really speak about it being from Canada, but I mean, that's ridiculous because it's on YouTube. Well, no big deal, you know. Right. So, does that mean that, you know, someone who's you know, put up some footage and has a YouTube or a Google ad in it is now suddenly doing commercial footage as well?
Right. Okay. I got the little story. I'll give you the gist of it. It says, if you fly a drone, post footage on YouTube, you could end up with a letter from the Federal Aviation Administration. Earlier this week, the agency sent a legal notice to Jason. Oh, I just lost the website. Hang on. Sorry, folks. It just died. It crashed. Maybe it's getting too many hits, huh?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, the agency sent a legal notice to Jason Haynes, a Tampa-based drone hobbyist who had been posting drone shot videos online roughly for the last year. The FAA said that because the ads are on YouTube, Haynes Flight constitute a commercial. There's something wrong with this website. It just keeps crashing. Come on, baby. The FAA said that because the ads were on YouTube, Haynes Flight constitute a commercial use of the technology subject to stricter regulations and enforcement action from the agency. It said that if he did not stop flying commercially, he would be subject to fines or sanctions. The office has received a complaint regarding the use of an unmanned aerial vehicle, according to the FAA, for commercial purposes, referencing his video on the on his website and on YouTube as evidence, the letter reads. After a view of your website, they said it does appear that you, I'm sorry, it does appear that the complaint is valid. The hobby use of drones and other model aircraft have never been regulated by the FAA, but the agency has been adamant about making a distinction between hobby and commercial use, which has led to much confusion over the last couple days. Where exactly does commercial use begin and hobby use end? For instance, if you fly for fun but happen to sell your footage a year later or something, you're flying for commercial purposes, which is just crap. Yeah. What if you give it to a news organization that runs it on a television station that has ads on it? What if you upload it to YouTube and Google happens to put an ad on it? What are you going to do? What if you decide to put an ad on it yourself? The letter makes clear that at least some of the FAA, his name was Michael Singleton, an aviation safety inspector in the FAA's Tampa office, take a very wide view of what is commercial. With this letter, the FAA is claiming that drone obtained art created by a hobbyist becomes retroactively commercial if it is ever sold. That is just crazy.
Yeah, that's just dope.
And yeah. If here it is displayed on a website that offers monetization in the form of advertising, Peter Sachs, a Connecticut-based attorney specializing in drone issues, told him, selling art is unquestionably one's right, and the government is forbidden from infringing upon that right. Haynes told me that his videos are technically monetized on YouTube, but that he has never received a payment from Google, and the revenue he's technically earned from Google ads is less than a dollar. He said, I've been flying for fun in this hobby for a long time. FAA spokesman Les Dorr told me that he is looking into specifics of the case, but said that often competitors will alert local enforcement offices about drone use. The question then is, can someone really have a competitor if they're not flying commercially?
Wow.
Yeah. In general, whenever we receive a complaint about an unauthorized UAS operation, we contact the operator and educate them about the regulations so that they can comply, Dorr said. It is not uncommon for a competitor who is not flying a UAS to alert us to such operations. I don't know if that was the case here. Haynes' case is without precedent. The FAA has sent many cease and desist letters to commercial drone operators, but those letters have mainly been in the response to registered businesses that advertise drones for hire with their website. To my knowledge, the agency hasn't sent letters like this to hobbyists. Haynes' website redirects to his YouTube page, and he offers no traditional commercial services. Wow. Just a little bit more here. The FAA said that the ability to fine or otherwise enforce certain restrictions on drones, which have not yet been tested in court. In the past, those fines have been as much as $10,000. Those restrictions are supposed to stop pilots from flying over people and flying above 500 feet. Some of Haynes' videos show him flying in ways that could potentially run afoul in those restrictions. Dorr, who was not involved in sending the letter to Haynes, reviewed some of his videos in response to my inquiry. He says it's possible that the letter was sent because of those potential safety violations. It is worth mentioning that the FAA drone enforcement strategy is a bit of a mess right now. Ugh.
That's a good title.
It goes on. I mean, we could, you get the gist of this. That's just crazy. I don't know. Thoughts?
Money grab.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all said this before, right, Wayne? It's unfortunate that this is the way it's going to go, and you never know where it's going to spread, even for us. So what, we're going to have to put little non-disclaimers on the bottom of all our videos from this point on, flight for non-commercial use.
You have to put license plates on your quads now, too.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm flying November 28 Echo Bravo today. I'm going to file a flight plan and everything, huh?
Nano Blade FPV.
Could you see that? Yeah. Get clean. Yeah, before you fly, outside your house.
Clearing out my kitchen.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
All right. Hey, let's get
off. Let's do some fun stuff.
Yeah, let's get off the drone stuff. I'm done with that. It's out of our system. Hey, how about some fun crash stories and stuff?
Oh, man.
Does that sound good?
Yes.
Yeah.
The first thing I want to start off with, because this story really kind of blew me away. Andre, I'm not sure if I sent this story to you.
You did, sir.
Did I do?
I got it.
Okay. Let's see. This is from Henry Peterson. Just a thought you guys would like to hear this, not intended to be the beginnings of an article, just a great story I thought you might enjoy. This past fall, my son's 8th grade science teacher here in San Francisco encouraged him to participate in the citywide science fair. My son is not a big RC flyer. He gets nervous, but that's another story. But he has been known to tinker around at the workbench with Dad as I am building various flying things. So we hatched a plan, a hypothesis, an experiment to test using the Flight Test Mini Speedster, actually two of them. Many RC planes feature flat wings. Other RC planes and full-scale aircraft feature airfoils. For his science fair project, he explored the history of the airfoil with the hypothesis that an airfoil wing will outperform a flat wing. We built two speedsters, one standard with the cambered shape to the wing, the other modified to feature a flat main wing. We then tested two performance scenarios, one powered, measuring distance to takeoff, the other unpowered, measuring glide distance from roughly 20 feet high with the motor cut completely. Testing each aircraft, 5 trials for both scenarios, we had a compelling pool of data that supported our hypothesis. We put our presentation onto a board and submitted it to the San Francisco Science Fair. He says, drum roll, please. This kid won 3rd place out of all the 8th grade entries in the entire city. He took 3rd. And he sent a little picture in with his what they did in his project and everything. He looks pretty proud.
Oh, yeah. He should be.
Awesome.
That's nice work he did, too.
Yeah, really nice. It said they had a ton of fun building and learning together. Quite an achievement. Mm-hmm. He just wanted to say thanks again for the kits, the memories, and the learning experience.
Great stuff.
Henry Joe and Henry George Peterson. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. That was a great story.
Okay, we're moving on to Hunter Benbow, and I've talked to this or emailed back and forth with this kid guy quite a bit. He's rather entertaining, so he sent us in another one, and he's from New Zealand, so maybe we can get good friends and we can just go visit and hang out with Hunter.
Yeah, let's go.
Hunter, if you're listening, we want to come hang out and fly with you. If you just buy our ticket, we'll be on our way.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Chris, Hunter from New Zealand here again. I have another crash injury story for you guys. A couple months ago, my uncle was working, fiddling, as he does, with his Blade 450X, the older version that was safe. And as he told me to have a go flying it one day, I lost orientation of it and flew it into some nice dirt. It hasn't really flown since due to continuous problems. On this particular morning at his house all alone, he pulls out his 450X and with 2 30-some-inch carbon fiber blades on it and proceeds to try and get it going. On his kitchen table. Anyways, for those who know, using a DX6i and a 450X, when you flick the gear switch into active, it goes full power. And now you can see where this is going. He accidentally hits the gear switch, not knowing that it was going to do this, swinging the huge carbon fiber blades in the action, flying into his notebook calculator, completely obliterating. I need another drink of water. Obliterating the calculator into tiny plastic fragments before finally spinning onto my uncle's arm a couple of times, leaving some long, deep cuts in his arm. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Not cool. He said the first thing he was trying to do was shut the copter down. Arm chopper off, he says, then try to stop the bleeding as the blood was now going everywhere. Luckily, not on the carpet. A semi-elderly man who is retired and to be bleeding from multiple large cuts under his arm and above and on the sides of his elbow, alone in his house. Anyhow, he grabs a towel, wraps up his arm the best he can. Here's what you'd expect him to go to the hospital.
Heck but no. No way.
He assesses the damage to the heli, getting all the part numbers. Then he phones the local hobby shop to get some parts reserved and ordered. Then he decides to go to the hospital and get the large number of stitches that I have forgotten the amount of, but it was quite a few. That's funny. He lived to tell the story and has three pretty major-looking scars on his left arm around the inside of his elbow. Sorry I couldn't send a picture. Maybe on the next email. Thanks for sharing these stories on the podcast. The moral of the story is, no matter heli plane, take the sharp things that spin off before you bench test.
Aye.
And this guy's more eager to get damaged things
man.
Ordered than I am. Yeah. I'm not bleeding when I'm trying to replace parts.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've had a few incidents, you know, but I've,
Thank God it's not more tragic.
Gee whiz.
Yeah, but it's a guy thing, because I've done that with dirt bikes where you've gone down, the first thing you worry about is the bike. Oh, yeah. It's like, who cares what bad shape you're in?
Do you guys want – I can tell a story. It's pretty good, actually. You guys might get a kick out. It's a little long, but I think you'll enjoy it. Let's see. This would have been in 06. I was leaving work. I had my motorcycle on the back, going riding after work. It was on a Saturday. Heading down this highway on Route 14, I popped up over this hill. And there was an old lady stopped right in front of me. And I thought, man, I'm going to smash her. This is it. I'm just going to kill this lady. So, you know, my only other option was, there was kind of like, it looked like a swamp and there was a ditch there. And I thought, well, forget it. I'm going down in the ditch. I'll see if I can save it and get around this lady. Well, I had a Honda Pilot at the time. As I went down in the ditch and thinking, oh, man, I got it. There was a buried concrete culvert pipe in there. And the front of the car hit it, and up I went, and I spun three times end over end. Now, the reason I kind of know this is I raced off-road, and Andre, you can kind of attest to this. I raced off-road car for quite a while, and I've rolled cars many a times. I've been in a five-point, you know, harness with the wrist strap, so I know what it feels like and what's going on. And the first thing you know, you're taught when you're off-road car, and they might tell you this too, Andre, is you don't
hands
let go
off.
Hands yeah. on the wheel. You hang on to that steering wheel so your
two
arm
feet
doesn't
in.
Yeah, so your arm doesn't go out the window and it gets chopped off. Anyway, so I'm rolling through the air going, okay, I'm rolling, here we go. I landed upside down. Now, the scary part was I landed in this pond, so I was upside down. The windshield was broke out. It was because the roof collapsed and the windshield was on my lap. Well, now I'm going underwater. So there's two things that really helped me out. One, being a motocrosser, I've crashed numerous times, so I know what crashing was like. Two, I'm a certified scuba diver, so I was going underwater. What panicked me was I couldn't get the window broke out, and I had the front windshield on me. So at this time, I'm holding my breath going, you know, I got probably maybe a minute or so to get out of here. Luck have it, for some reason, I don't know why, I reached over and hit the electric window. It went down.
Yeah.
The window went down, off came the seatbelt, out of the water I came, out of the swamp I'm crawling out. At this time, there was a bunch of cars stopped. There was an EMT that happened to be a couple cars back. First thing I said, where's my dirt bike? The guy says, look, man, I was bloody. Mm-hmm. I still have a scar here. The airbag burnt my hand real bad mm-hmm. when it went off. So I was flesh hanging, bloody all over. But I knew I was nothing was broke. I knew where I was, what was going on. And the guy's going, sir, you're in shock. You have to sit down. There's no, I said, look, dude, there was a dirt bike on the back of this car and I'm going to find it. So I did. It was just kind of funny. I did find it and it didn't hurt the bike at all. I mean, when the car hit it, it flew out and just kind of laid down in the swamp. So it was just kind of a crazy, funny story. And I lost everything in the car. Naturally, everything went out. My cell phone went out. And again, that was one of them times where you think, I don't know anybody's phone number. My wife was in school at the time.
Sure.
I couldn't get a hold of anybody. And here I was sitting alongside the road. The state trooper wouldn't even let me in his car because I stunk and was full of, you know, swamp. And it just happened to be a guy I work with drove by in his car. He didn't see me. He seen the motorcycle sitting because I pulled it out of the swamp, was checking it all out and put it on the kickstand, you know, and he's like, that's Chris's bike. I know that's Chris's bike, you know, and then finally he realized it was me and he drove me home and it was like an hour and a half away.
No.
But that was my crazy funny story of.
I think you might have told me that when we were driving on 21, unless you had another accident. On
I've had a few of them.
Maybe it was a different one.
So that's my crazy funny story I throw out there. All right, let me get my phone back on. Here's another one. This was from Curious Airlines.
Yeah. Felt bad for this guy because you could totally relate.
Yeah. I just want to say flight test has really grown on me in the hobby, so I want to thank all of you for all the hard work you've done to make this hobby easy and inexpensive for all us noobs. I thought you would find my crash story as a reminder of pre-flight checks. This crash was back in September, but it was so spectacular I want to share it with you. So here I am wanting to try out the bigger pattern ships and 3D flight. I did my research and found a great 3D hobby shop pattern 3D plane called the 48-inch Super Viper. It built together well, and I flew it throughout the summer having tons of fun. While the summer was closing and the trees changing color, I had my last flight on this wonderful airplane on September 18, 2014. I did my usual routine of driving to the field with my father at the end of the day, taking the wings out of the bags, the fuselage, the battery, the transmitter, everything. I opened the canopy hatch, slid the wing spar in, connected the aileron extension, screwed the wings in, plugged the battery in, heard the satisfying four beeps of the four-cell, and I was ready to go. I taxied out to the field, took off, straight up into the sky. The plane is extremely overpowered, making it a blast to fly. I did some flat spins, rolling Harriers, hovers. Coming out of the hover, I noticed something. The left wing wobbled a little bit. This reminds me of Pat a lot. I didn't know what it was, and I was thinking, that was kind of strange. I pushed the image out of my mind and kept flying. Bing, 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 bing.
Mistake number one.
Yeah, that's where the little light bulb, ding, 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 ding. I was nuts. I flew around again, about ready for a snap roll, and really, let's see, I rolled, ready for a snap roll, and that really did it. Coming out of the roll, the wing slid off. I panicked. The fuselage was at full power. It spun and spun until I cut the throttle, but it was too late. The fuselage crunched loudly and horribly into the hard ground about 100 feet away.
Here's the part that just, like, I felt really bad right here.
And anybody that's really crash hard, and I don't care if it's balsa or foam, when that thing hits the ground, it is loud. It's just this loud, like, you'll never forget that sound. He even said, it's a sound I can still hear in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the soccer team far on the other side of the field go, oh! I was so shocked. It happened so fast. I could have blinked and it happened. My father just stood there, picked up a something and said, you forgot the screws. It took me some time to register what happened. We did the walk of shame. I was absolutely astonished that both wings were actually good as new, and even one was still connected to the fuselage. Though, after picking up the falling wing, I saw the fuse. From the spinner to the end of the hatch, it was crumpled. I picked it up, or at least I tried to. It was still stuck in the ground. I pulled on the motor and the props and a V-shaped prop with dirt all over it. All the electronics were fine, and we rebuilt it later. The shrink wrap was peeled back and left a very thin layer of balsa, so we had to use a template for the walls. The carbon reinforcements were still there, and gave us a proper length to the motor box. Ooh, that's a good thing. Which we got from 3D Hobby Shop for a replacement. I'm still flying it today, and it flies well, but always give that wing screw an evil look. Moral of the story, always check your plane.
Mm-hmm. That's not bad. Could have been worse.
Oh, that's a great story.
The loudest wreck I ever remember hearing was the cinder block plane when they took the cinder block out and did a roll.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. And it was a long ways away, but it's such large-scale plane. I can still hear that. Were you at that episode? Do you remember the cinder block
plane? Oh, I remember that. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you had to do Nelson Cage. That's the guy with the picture at the end of the...
All right, we'll get to that. I got the rest of them on here. Let's see. The next one I have here is from... Merritt Cavanis. He's from Iowa. Hopefully, I've got a crash story to help set the beginners at ease when it comes to flying with new people or being intimidated around someone more advanced in the hobby. This story took place last summer. I was 17 at the time, 2 years of casual on and off flying. I met a guy at the youth group who loyally watches flight tests, and we hit it off and become good friends. He talked like he was in the scratch building, and I was starting to venture that myself. I felt like we were probably on pretty equal terms as far as our planes. It seemed to me that we had a lot in common, and we picked a nice summer day to go flying. I thought it was a little odd when he asked for help hauling planes to the park. I've only flown by myself previously, but I arrived with my pickup truck with my two rough-looking planes in the back. I couldn't believe my eyes. In the front yard was a huge 6S-powered, scale-looking P-47, a new shiny Park Zone T-28 Trojan, and an Ultra Micro Striker. I was excited to see the planes, but also kind of embarrassed about my own beat-up Super Cub held together by shoestrings and a scratch-built foamy. At the park, we wasted no time to burn a couple of batteries and fly our own planes. First up, we decided to play past transmitter with my squirrely short-coupled foam plane. It took for some smooth laps around the field, showing him the capabilities and some loops before changing a fresh battery and hand-launching him for his first flight. He had a tough time keeping it in the air and wrestled it around in the sky. He said something after the flight like, "Wow, if you can fly this, you can easily fly my planes."
I love it.
That's like getting a plane from Bixler.
Never trims it. It's like, "Oh, it flies great." And hands you the transmitter. Yeah. And it's all you can do to keep it from launching into the ground.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. That broke the icing for me to hear those words, and I was very intimidated. I wasn't intimidated anymore. So soon enough, I had flown a pack through both his T-28 and the Striker, and they were both fantastic, had zero troubles with him. We finished the day with a couple minor repairs and a list of great memories. Needless to say, I felt so outclassed at the start of the day by the shiny new airplanes, but flying that day taught me a couple of lessons. One, skill is relative to what you're used to and what you train your thumbs to keep up with. He was used to flying these nice, smooth planes and doing patterns. I was used to a plane that would flip in for in and out of control if you weren't correcting constantly. Two, who cares what plane you bring to the field? You're still going to be the one behind the sticks. Just fly whatever beautiful scale warbirds or insane-looking foamy aircraft that you love to fly and go have a blast.
Yep.
Crash hard, laugh louder. Best regards, Merritt.
I did like that story a lot.
That's true.
Oh,
You know what I mean?
It's all about having fun.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
But I mean, you said Bixler not trimming. Oh, man.
Oh, man. How many times?
You're already halfway left on the ailerons just to keep it good straight or whatever. You're like, whoa.
Oh, that cracks me up. And how many times poor Josh Scott, like, he'll just pass it off. And he goes, "Well, you got to hold, you know, a little bit of left elevator. It's a little bit out of trim, you know." And later on, you fly and you're like, "I can't even fly this thing."
Nope. But he'll fly that thing straight as can be.
Oh, man.
All right, I think I got that last one with the tree here. This one's good, too.
That one made me laugh.
Yeah.
Mm.
Hang on, let me get a drink of water. I'm talking too much. Okay. This last one. Hello, my name is Nelson Kays, and I'm from Costa Mesa, California, and I have a crash story for you. I'm fairly new to RC airplanes. I started sometime in October or November. I picked it up fairly quickly. Most of my mistakes are from one being too anxious to get in the air or too lazy to get my plane dialed in. This particular crash I wanted to tell you about today happened on one of the few rainy days that we've had this year. The rain stopped a bit, so I thought I'd go out and burn a battery before it started raining again. There's a small park in my neighborhood probably not supposed to fly there, but I'd try to be safe about it and only go out when people are not really around out there. Anyway, the field in the park is just big enough for my plane to circle, but it's pretty tight, so I have to fly above the trees, circle around, and come down between the gap and land in the field. Ooh, that sounds tough already. And Izzy says, I bet you can guess what happened already, but on my first toss, I flew and went for my usual pattern, but I guess I didn't gain altitude as fast as I usually do, and I got nervous as I got near some trees, so I snapped a turn to fly away from them and back to the center of the field to gain some altitude and continue the pattern. But I guess I was just not near the trees. I was past, and as I snapped around and punched it, I thought I was way away, but I planted it at the very top of the biggest tree in the park, not 20 seconds after getting it in the air. Not just near the top, but like the tip top. Like a star on a Christmas tree. And he sent us a picture.
Yes, folks. And you got to see the picture because this is dead accurate.
It was probably 60 or 70 feet high, or at least 20 or 30 feet higher than I could throw anything that could get to it. It says, I tried chucking anything I could, water bottles, baseballs, much more attached to a string, managing to get them stuck in the tree, but not getting them anywhere near the plane. It was started to rain again and making me more anxious, frustrated, and feeling stupider for not waiting to fly. So I got the idea of casting a fishing weight over to pull it down. But first cast the first cast snapped the line, just casting the heavy weight. So I'm soaking wet from trying to get it down. I loaded on heavier line on the pole, and about a half hour later, standing out in the rain in the middle of a residential park, casting a fishing pole in a tree.
Doing some fly fishing.
Yeah. I managed to get the line over the tail of the airplane. I gently pulled on it, worried that the line would just come off the plane and knock it off. As I was stoked as I watched it to... Wait a minute. He got the line around the plane and knocked it off, and he was stoked as I watched it starting to glide down until it circled about a quarter of the way down and back into the tree, going perfectly between the branches and wedging itself perfectly locked into the branches with the tail feathers on one side of the branch and the wing on the other. And somehow it locked in tight. I tried the fishing line again, but somehow wrapped the line around the branch and tied the plane to the tree, soaking wet and defeated, and I gave up and went home. This is After about a week of casually walking through the park and chucking pine cones, water bottles, whatever I could find, I finally knocked it loose and got it down. Still, my only plane... I have dying to gut it and make a FT model. I'm not sure what I'm going to make of it yet, but that's my story. Sorry, it was a little long-winded, but I love podcasts and hope this was entertaining. Nelson Case and attaches a photo. Maybe I'll try to post that photo.
Yes,
that.
You could just feel the frustration coming from that weird side. Yeah,
and I really felt for Nelson because, and I know I've told this story on the podcast, but I'll throw it out there again. It was definitely my early years, and I had my Hobby Zone Super Cub, and I was getting a little cocky. And usually, that's what happens: is you get a little cocky, and then
we've
something
all done
happens.
It.
Yeah,
we've all
and
done
then
it.
You crash, and you feel like you go back two or three steps, right, Mike?
Mike? Oh, more than you can imagine. Man, it's hard to even step back into flying when you have some of those incidents.
You know, I live in an allotment. I'm down in a valley, and I'm surrounded by trees. And the only really thing I have is a nice long cul-de-sac road. You know, it's a dead end, but there's trees everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I got brave, and I thought, you know what? I'm getting good here. I can fly this Super Cub. I think I can take off down the road. You know, get over my 50-foot obstacle, cruise around, like he said, above the trees, and bring it into land. Well, needless to say that, you know, that poor little brushed, you know, with the geared motor, I didn't make it. And I landed, again, I was in a tree probably 60, 70 feet up in a giant, like, huge oak tree. And for days, we were chucking things at it. You know, we did the fishing line. I mean, anything. And it was wedged in there. And the funny story was the neighbor guy finally come out one day, and I was chucking things at it. And he's like, hey, man, what are you doing over here? You know? And I said, well, my plane's been stuck in your tree for like a week or so. And he goes, well, I can get it down for you, no problem. I'm like, this is great. He goes, I'll just go and get my shotgun, come back out, we'll just blow the thing out of the tree. And I'm like, no. I can't remember the exact time, but I want to say that plane was up there for almost a year. And we finally had a horrendous windstorm one time, and it finally, you know, every day, Mike, I drive by that airplane, you know, coming home from work, and I look, and it's still there. It was laying on the ground, and I was excited and went over, but, you know, being in a tree for a year, the plane. Now I wish I would have kept it. I think I would just would have hung it up in the garage or something.
It's funny because when I lost my Kinetic, I had to be in a tree because there was fields all around, but there was pine trees. They were 50, 60 feet. Well, they finally cut them down last year, and I'm like, I forgot to ask the guys, kind of like, did you by any chance come across a remote control airplane? But the owner said they did not find it as far as I know. But I would have swore it was in those pines somewhere. Because that's the one Chad came out with his FPV, was trying to look for an aerial.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
At my dad's place, but we couldn't find it. And it just, I lost it for a second behind my dad's roof, and I thought it would come out the other side. Well,
no.
I lost it completely. How do you lose completely? I managed, that's how my accidents go. I just lose everything. I have no chance of getting electronics or nothing back. Everything's gone.
You do it, Mike, you do it right. Man. I would give you credit there.
I don't know how that.
You do it right.
How does that happen? I mean, I searched for that Kinetic more than I did my H Quad. I spent probably 2 or 3 days looking for that thing. Wow. I could not find it.
All right. That was the end of the crash stories, and they were pretty good this week. So if
you guys have lost stories than crash stories.
Yeah. Keep sending them in. We're getting low here, so if you guys are listening, like to hear them, send some more in. I love to talk about them and break them down, and it's just too much fun because everybody crashes. Yes. There's just no way around it.
Oh, when I crashed with you guys, I did. I felt like an ostrich. I just wanted to bury my head in the ground. It was horrible, horrible feeling.
All right, last subject for the podcast, and this one I think is a pretty good one too, and I want to get everybody's thoughts and opinions on this, and then I'll kind of throw mine out there. But the reason I'm bringing this up is a lot of times on the forums, I'm not that I'm picking on them, but you know, I love Horizon Hobby and I have a lot of their products. But it seems like here lately they get a new product that comes out that has the AS3X or the Safe System on it. It's a love-hate relationship. The people either say, "Oh man, this is the greatest thing since apple pie," or you get a lot of people on there like, "I don't want it. I don't like it. I don't like the way it flies," and blah blah blah, and on and on, and it's really crazy. It almost, you know, I don't really kind of understand it. And one guy was on there really pretty much bashing it pretty hard. Now, why he would just, here's what some of the guys are doing. They're pulling the receivers out. They can sell them, actually make money on them, put your own receiver in. But this guy's like just
absolutely
really bashing this. I'm not going to get into details or anything, but the funny thing was one of the Horizon guys came on. He was really complaining about the Safe System. Oh, it's not teaching people how to fly, and I'm never going to. And the Horizon guy says, if you don't like it, don't push the button.
Yeah,
you don't have to push the
button. It's
features.
It's options. Yeah. It's not a must-have. Yeah. Yeah, a must.
And my thoughts were like, I would bet you a $100 bill if that plane was getting ready to auger itself in the ground, you're going to push that button. You know?
I did.
Yeah,
numerous times.
I think the biggest gripe, though, really is people would like to have the option of turning it on and off.
Yes.
And I do kind of understand the glider thing. Now, like with the Ultra Micro Radian.
Yep.
Now, the AS3X really came about for the Ultra Micro stuff. Now, and you guys remember in the early days of flight tests when these Ultra Micro stuff come out. Like, if it was over 5 miles an hour, them things were a handful.
Mm-hmm.
And when the AS3X first came out and we were out flying around in 10, 12 miles an hour, and you could still have fun and fly these things, it was unheard of. We're like, oh, this is unbelievable. You know, and they kind of got smart and like, wow, if this is this good in Ultra Micro, what's it going to be like when we throw it in a bigger plane that where, you know, your cutoff might be 8 or 10 miles an hour. Now you're out flying in 15 miles an hour. So, you know, I have a lot of planes with it. And it for me, it just makes it more enjoyable. Again, like if a 10-mile-an-hour wind says, Wayne says, no way, man, it's just too windy for me. And now, you know, we can go out and fly. I don't know. I just don't see where why. Now, here's one thing I do kind of understand is some of the planes that they have coming out is they're only in a bind and fly with that receiver, and a lot of guys would like to see the plug and play.
Right.
Which I understand that. You know, that makes sense to me. So that, you know, that's kind of one of their gripes. The Safe System, I am all for it. I mean, I'm totally, well, even for me, like with the Sukhoi or maybe with the night vision or whatever, even though, you know, I'm an experienced pilot and can do a lot of things, I want to try new stuff.
You can push more limits, in all honesty. I mean, until you learn that stuff. So,
right.
I don't know.
Right.
I have a hard time saying too many negative things.
And one of the other big gripes with the AS3X is, and Andre, I want to talk to you a little bit about it too. As they say, it kind of inhibits the way the plane acts or how it really flies. And I don't agree with that, and I just want to, I threw it out there of some comments and everything, and I just want to give kind of a shout-out to Ryan Papp. He said, really, personally, I've never really felt a big difference flying with it or without it. And that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. If it's windy and you're out and it's still flying, like if you're flying in no wind, it's doing its job and you don't even notice it's there.
Wind is more of a nuisance variable than an enjoyable experience.
Right, so. And if it can make your experience more enjoyable, why wouldn't you use
it? Sure.
You know? And again, some of the glider stuff a little bit I can see, like, you know, if we're out with our ultra micro radians and it is dead calm, no, turn it off. I don't need it. But if you get that thing out in a 10 or 12 mile an hour wind,
you're going to appreciate it.
That thing is all over the place. And it helps. It really does. So, Andre, I know you've flown a few with the AS3X, and you were, at least at first anyway, you were kind of on the fence, like, yeah, I don't really know. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
So has that changed any, or are you still?
He's not a fan of the stagility.
Stagility. Well, you know what? Actually, no. In the wind, stagility is fun with the Sukhoi. The first time I ran into it was when I was setting up my buddy's UMX Radiant, and you know he got too far, and I'm trying to bring the plane back, and I, you know, it's like, no, I need to dive because I need to pick up some speed and stuff like this, and it was fighting some of the maneuvers I wanted to do. So, but on my own, I'm a lot more comfortable with that plane now.
Uh-huh.
And no, I guess I know its envelope now, so I know where it's going, but, the plane that really got under my skin and I still really haven't had a successful flight is that little, P-40 that I bought at Christmas.
Uh-huh.
I know I was trying to fly that, and it's just, you know, I'm like, it's fallen out of the sky on me a few times, and it's like, why, you know, and it's just, I think the AS3X is a little aggressive in it, maybe, and it just washes itself out. Now, I haven't had a chance to fly it because, you know, the winter's been so cold that those little 1Ss just, they don't want to fly.
You're right.
So it will get some flight time this spring, and I do have that USB module. So I am going to go into it, and from what I've read now, and especially, well, I mean, in the little Radiant, it's going to get the cutoff, so I can toggle the switch, same thing you and Wayne have done, right?
Right, right.
But then what I understand is you can go in there, and you can start playing with the parameters and do and dial the plane in a little bit better to suit your flying style. So,
right.
I just haven't had a successful flight, and I want to be able to turn it off so I know what the plane can do.
Uh-huh.
So in the Sukhoi, I think on the big planes, I mean, when you're in your various modes, I don't think it interferes as much. I mean, you do have the panic switch, but you know, that's safe. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, when you're in like, when you're outside of stability mode on the Sukhoi, it's not really in your face as much. I mean, you know, in precision, you're flying around having a good time, but I don't think the control surfaces are moving as radically. So, so it's, but I, once I'm able to turn those off on the little UMXs, I'm definitely going to have a different experience. But, like I said, first time I flew the Radiant, it was like, okay, yeah, this is what it's doing. And now I know, but I've gone in where I'm doing flights and I'm trying to do loops and some stuff like this, and it's fighting you through the loop.
But technically, really, it shouldn't, because from my understanding, what I've read, I'm way off, you know, I'm just sitting here in front of a microphone thinking I know everything, but is if you're touching those sticks, that AS3X or, you know, the stabilization has no effect on that. You know, when you get it into whatever orientation you have and then them sticks are neutral, then it's going to try to hold the airplane there. But as long as what you're doing, you know, in the control inputs, that AS3X is not supposed to have any kind of input whatsoever. So
I'll have to play. Well, like I said, I haven't flown the P-40 enough to really go at it, but I just remember in my with the radio, and I know I was trying to just, so maybe it's just I'm coming off, maybe I'm releasing the stick, you know, in the maneuver, and then it's just trying to right itself right away, yeah, saying, oh, there's no input, and then it's pulling itself up. So maybe
that's a real possibility there.
Yeah.
If you stall, if you just, you know, you may have those moments where you're not putting any inputs in, and yeah, it starts correcting. That's probably what you're fighting against.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
That's like the sagility in the in the Sukhoi. As soon as you stop moving the sticks,
that drove me nuts.
Yeah, that too, really.
I couldn't.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
I wasn't giving the inputs constant feedback. Right. And it was jumping right now. Yeah, it seemed a little quick on that.
Right, which, and we talked about that. Yeah, unless you were up there and just really just
banging the sticks
around. Yeah, banging the sticks around.
Which affect you too bad.
Right. That would be freaky. Like, you just, I mean, seem like just a couple seconds, like you'd try to level out and then that thing with you, like, whoa.
Once
you know the plane is going to do that, then you go out into the wind, and like you said, you're having fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a fairly expensive plane, so it's a little extra security blanket, I suppose. But I think in all of these technologies, you know, we should be, as pilots or as owners of the device, I do want to turn this off. Mm-hmm. You know, I bought it because it's got the features, but it would be neat to see if I could turn it off. But
And I'm going to throw this out here. This is not what I believe, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here, and I could be just really full of crap. Now, let's just say that one reason maybe Horizon isn't putting out these plug and play planes, and they're selling the Bind and Fly with the AS3X and the Safe, is because without it, maybe that these planes might not fly as good. So they put the stability on there, which helps it in orientations and holding its, you know, precision away it's flying. That they're thinking, you know what, if it's way better with the AS3X system in it than it would be without it as a plug and play. Do you think that's even possible? Do you get what I'm trying to say here?
Relaxing the R&D on the airfoil development,
I'm not saying
and
that.
Using technology to help it fly a little better, maybe.
Yeah, like I'm saying, okay, say your buddy bought one as a plug and play, and you bought one as the Bind and Fly with the AS3X, and you go out and fly side by side, and he's thinking, why is your plane flying so much better than mine? You know what I mean? So, I'm just playing devil's advocate and throwing this out of my butt, but could that be a possibility?
Mm. Well, it could be a possibility. I don't think it is.
No.
But, you know, you always have that.
Right.
But some of those people who are just totally diehard against it, for one, I wonder how many of those guys have ever flown anything that has it.
Yeah.
And two, you know, anything to do with helping people fly, getting people into the hobby, anything is good. I mean, it's like, I do not believe it's going to hinder. Yes, you'll get to a point where you can turn it off or you don't want it. But by now, you're probably moving up to other planes.
Yeah.
But just, you know, I mean, how many of us are still flying the very first plane you have? You know, it's like, you know, if it's a beginner plane, that's exactly what it is. You know? So for training, an awesome thing.
And I mean, honestly, I think if you haven't tried it or you're on the fence or whatever, try it. I personally think if you keep an open mind that you'll actually like it. And this is just an example, but, you know, we talk about, we fly the Beavers a lot. And then also I do have the Park Zone Sport Cub, which is a little bit smaller and also a lot lighter than the Beaver. Mm-hmm. Now, the Beaver's big and it's heavy, and we take it out, and it's sometimes we go out and fly that thing in 12, 15 mile an hour winds. It's a tank, and it gets bumped around, but it handles it pretty good. Mm-hmm. Where if I didn't have the AS3X on that Park Zone Sport Cub, I would have my hands full with that thing. Where the AS3X just
makes it feel like that larger
scale
plane.
Knocks that edge off to where I can still have fun with it.
And I think the other thing you're going to see too is the difference in opinion comes from you're having fun flying. I mean, there's those of us, we don't care.
Right.
Let's just go have some fun. That's like the camera debate. Is it Canon or is it Nikon? Who cares? Grab your camera. Let's go take some pictures.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Who cares what you're flying? Let's just go have some fun and fly. But some guys, it's all about pride. It's all about their image.
Skill, yeah.
Yes. Okay. And, I'm flying a $1,500 plane and I don't have that. My radio has 18 channels. You know, it's like, who cares? Nobody cares. You know, only you do.
Right.
The rest of us, we just want to go out and have some fun.
Right. And I'll tell you what, I'll just read a few comments, just, you know, get put the feelers out there from some other people what they're thinking. And again, a lot of this too was the same thing. I really wish I'd be able to disable it without having to buy another cable or cut open the airplane. Sometimes it is useful, like in very windy conditions, but it's just not needed in calm weather. I like to fly aerobatics on calm nights, and AS3X makes my maneuvers look choppy and, frankly, very bad. Also, on AS3X on a glider is the absolute worst idea on the face of the plane. Which, on a glider, I can kind of understand that a little bit if you're really hunting for thermals. It does eliminate the turbulence and keeps itself level. Probably the reason the AS21 did so poorly. I don't think that was where you... I also think that big, stable models like Cubs do not need gyros, and it does nothing to drive up, but does nothing but drive up cost. Granted, I have not flown the Sport Cub, but the Select Scale Super Cub from FlyZone, as well as a Beaver, he says a FlyZone and the Beaver excel in windy conditions, which is exactly what we just said without no gyros. But they're big, heavy planes, and they fly big and heavy. Mm-hmm. He does say, however, he does think that Safe and Wise are a great achievement and will help many people learn to fly quickly. Another one says, I got the Sport Cub S with Safe. It was my first plane. Stabilization is great when you want to familiarize with the controls without having to worry about crashing. Safe disabled, the panic button is a real lifesaver.
Mm-hmm. That I agree. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts, Mike?
Oh,
I've
beaten it to death. The panic recovery.
But have you flown much with like the AS3X?
The Micro Radian.
Yeah, Ultra Micro Radian. Yeah,
which he switched. I can switch that off and on. But the Sukhoi, I can't even remember what modes I was messing with. I think it was the Stagility mode, but I wasn't a big fan because it was snapping. And that's the AS3X or not for the self-stabilization. I can't really talk too much to it. I haven't flown a lot with it. So.
Yeah. But, Andre, I'm really interested when you get a chance and you get kind of, say, like a 10-mile-an-hour day and you get that...
fight the variable.
Get your cable hooked up and get it to where you can turn it on and off. To get that thing out there, fly it on, then fly it with it off, I think you're going to notice a huge difference, especially on the ultra micro stuff.
It will be. I'm looking forward to getting that one going because, I mean, year one, my very first one was that little micro Tiger Moth, and I flew that thing in some obscene amount of wind. Like, I would sit on the field, and I would putt away to myself, get to myself in the wind, pull up, and then let the wind take it and just come it back. And that's a full-on manual. There's no technology. There's no stabilization behind that little airplane, little 1S, right?
Yep.
So, to have something where I'm like, "Lo, I know I can bank, and do this, and then the plane is fighting me." I'm like, "Oh, come on, let's have a little fun." So we'll see. I want to see that thing go.
Comparison, yeah. Get that comparison right. Going.
And I think the P40 is an early, it was an earlier UMX. I think Chris, we were discussing it when I was buying it. So, I know they've got on that little USB. What is that? It's SPM 3060. It's a little USB interface.
Yep.
They on the disk there are when you download the software, there are Warbird setups, and I've watched a couple of YouTube videos where they can talk and they talk about you can dampen the gyros and everything. So in theory, I'll be able to set it up to suit my flying a little differently, I think.
Right. Yeah, and I'd be interesting to because basically we haven't messed with that too much, and we've either turned it on or off, and even with the bigger stuff, they got the app out new too, Andre, that you can plug with your phone and adjust everything right at the field too, but. I mean, personally, right now, I've been so happy with, how they've been flying out of the box. But it would be fun to tinker with that a little bit to see, what it does. I'll just read a couple more little comments, and then we'll say we're done with this. Another one, this was from, and I don't know if you know her, Andrea Woodvine. Andre?
Yes, I do. Yes.
She had a comment. She said, it's a good thing to use as a last resort when you get into trouble, but it's not to use all the time. That stops us from actually learning to fly and how to get out of sticky situations. It's called
panic mode.
Yeah, it's oh crap button. Not oh, I really can't be bothered to pull this stick forward button, which I don't really think people, you know, I watched Brian this year when he was starting out with the Delta Ray, and I mean, he would really let that thing, he'd fight it to the end to try to get it to level and get his own control to where finally he's like, ah, you know, and then pushes the button. And I think most people do that. I don't think they're going to be
late. There's one thing being disoriented. Three mistakes high. There's a whole nother when you're like one mistake high.
Exactly. And that's what he would do. A lot of times what he would do is he'd get three mistakes high, throw
it in. So you can still learn how to get out of some of these
predicaments. He would throw it in expert mode, and you'd just see this thing playing, going all every which way and upside down. And he would do everything in his power to try to figure out how to, and then, you know, obviously at the last second, throw it.
That's why I love my FT Racer.
Yeah.
I fly that plane completely different how I fly my my Sukhoi, you know?
Oh, yeah, right.
Slight price tag difference.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, one point on this thing, what's really interesting is, you know, Spectrum is still the lead manufacturer. We haven't really seen a viable competitor coming out with anything remotely on par.
No, but supposedly we've talked about it. Yeah, and read that the Wise is going to be, from what I've seen so far, almost identical to the AS3X. So, honestly, I think you're going to see it on a lot of planes coming up here.
Will that bring
the
night vision price down, maybe?
I don't know. As soon as I get a coupon on that, I'll let you know.
Yeah, you know, on that plane,
get the competitor.
You know, we all swore up and down last year that we're going to have like four Sukhois, but I might be the only guy with a Sukhoi by the end of this.
Yeah, you might be two or three night vision airs and you with your Sukhoi.
Now I feel bad because talked the Sukhoi up big time. And then when I saw added benefit to fly at night now.
I still like it.
When Chris told me, I was like, I saw that thing and went, no, that's going to be, I think that's this year's hot ticket, you know?
Yeah, I still love it. And as far as I know,
I really did enjoy that.
We got done flying it. It hung up. It's still hanging up here in flight test. I don't think anybody has touched it since. So
we may have to touch it again if no one else touches it. I like that a lot.
You know, what would be really cool too, I think maybe we'll do is we get a night vision air, take the Sukhoi out too, and we'll just fly them back to back and see what the big differences are.
That would be awesome.
That would be cool.
So. I won't be pushing my limits anymore, though.
I've heard that. Yeah.
We know the plane's
terrible. Talk about getting cocky inverted.
All right, anything else on this? We'll wrap this thing up. Get out of here. Nothing? We're good?
I'm good.
All right. Hey, once again, thanks, everyone, for listening. We enjoyed doing this.
Good to talk to you, Andre.
Thank you. Yes, likewise, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Andre, for finally answering your phone and hanging out with us.
I sent Chris the note. I had people email me going, what's the deal? You know, like, are you really fishing the after-hour guys? I'm like, no, I was on a trip with my wife. We were up north. Yeah. It was bad, you know, and...
Aren't you already up north?
How much north do you go there?
You go any further north, you're going to be heading south.
it was a beautiful weekend, but Laura, when Chris sent the email to me, can you join? And Laura's like, yeah, I think we can. And it was just the internet was so poor up there that we couldn't get a stable lock. So
You're with your wife, man. Yeah, take your time with your wife. Got to do it.
And for the record, I did tell him that. Yeah. I said, don't worry about it. You know, we were kind of harassing him on this side. But,
Yeah, we'll definitely beat you up over it, but we totally support you.
Yeah, wait till flight fast.
So I guess I can finally text Fred then and tell him he can go relax that I don't have to call him.
Yeah, stand down, Fred.
Are you going to be able to make it to flight fast?
Oh, he's already ready.
My tickets are booked already. All right. I'll be there, man.
I'll see you.
And then we'll have to figure out what fleet I'm going to bring up, right, Chris?
Yeah, well, once it gets a little closer, we'll see what we can do and what to bring.
We're going to have a good time. I'm hoping we can get a pretty good Canadian contingency to come up, but we'll see how things go.
Yeah, we love the Canadians. You guys are great. So, all right, well, we're going to get out of here. This was fun, Ed. Good time. We'll be back here in a couple weeks. Go check us out on Instagram at FT After Hours, and because most everything on there is stuff Wayne's done anyway. So go check out his awesome photography and pictures and stuff.
Not recently.
It's on there. And the weather's been bad. Yeah. So we've just been.
Spring is coming.
Yep, spring is coming. Yeah. And I'm sure you'll be back out there with that big lens and, you know. And hit me up on Twitter at FT After Hours, or keep sending in them crash stories at chris@flighttest.com. And other than that, we'll be back here in a couple weeks. All right.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
See you guys.
See you guys. Thanks.
See you, Andre.